and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology, with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife, and author of the best-selling book, Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together, we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk, or alternatively, visit our website, balanceology.uk. Coming off the back of the COVID-19 pandemic, the topic of mental health has never been more talked about. People's lives have been so dramatically affected, both from the long periods of isolation and lockdowns that we faced, but also from returning to workplaces and having to readjust and re-navigate our new working methods. Subsequently, people's mental health has really suffered, and we thought it's really important to dedicate not one but a couple of episodes to the topic of mental health, explaining exactly what it is and discussing different factors that contribute to our mental health and well-being, such as sleep, exercise and nutrition. And we'll also give you some ideas of what you can do both individually and as part of a team in a working environment to help improve and maintain optimal mental health. We hope you enjoy this episode. Episode 39 of the Art of Balance podcast, and today we're going to continue our theme with mental health, and we're going to be talking about mental health in the workplace specifically, and what you can do as an individual yourself to assist and aid your own positive mental health, and also what you can do if you're a manager or a leader of teams and assist your team members with their mental health. So Jane, lots to cover in half an hour, but I think it's going to be really helpful for people, both from a personal and a business perspective. So maybe a good place to start is what we mean when we talk about mental health and mental ill health.
Yes, I think that is a really great place to start, because there's still quite a lot of misunderstanding around those terms. And so to clarify that, really, mental health is the combination of our emotional, our social and our psychological well-being. And really, when we aren't well in our mental health, it's almost like a spectrum. So if you imagine at one end of the scale, you have a bit like with physical fitness, where you're really healthy and really well in your physical body. If you imagine being really well and really healthy in your mental capacities, you would be alert, you would be focused when you need to be, you would also be able to relax and switch off when you're wanting to be relaxed and switch off. You would have the capacity to move through all of the ranges of emotions that you have without any of them being troublesome for you, and an accepting of all sort of parts of yourself. So when we slide to the other end of the scale and go into the sort of area of ill mental health, then at the extreme end of the spectrum, there would be severe symptoms presenting that would indicate an individual in crisis mentally, which would include things like thinking about self-harming or having suicidal thoughts. So mental ill health in itself can take the form of any number of different disorders that therefore affect the healthy functioning of your emotional, social and psychological capacities.
And this sliding scale that you talk about when we're talking about mental health is also known as the mental health continuum.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Jane, so what could be factors that may increase the risk of a mental health illness in individuals?
Well, if we think first, because we said we would sort of focus on the workplace, if we take that first of all, because obviously all areas of our lives are really intrinsically linked. So if there's something going on at work, it affects us how we feel at home and vice versa. But if we start with the workplace, factors like excessive workload, workplace bullying, discrimination, having a poor work environment or having a sort of setup that isn't really conducive to your best work. So I remember once in one of my roles, for example, I was spending a lot of time looking at a screen to create, and on that screen having to create reports, and I was needing to toggle back and forth between different documents to...
Toggle?
Yeah, you know where you use your thumb and your index
tab
finger.
Tab and shift or something.
And really, I found that quite stressful, and it was taxing on my body because it developed RSI because of it. Really, I should have had three different screens so I could see all of the reports, all of the different areas that I needed for the report at the same time, and have ergonomic kind of support and all of that. So whenever our environment isn't great, we've maybe spend a lot of time in front of a screen, or we've got lots of artificial lighting. Maybe, you know, some people work in spaces where there are no windows and there's no natural daylight at all. And that affects our mental health.
I've worked in offices as well where sound can be quite annoying. Like, you know, it could be a certain radio station playing that you've kind of tuned out to, but it's still there. And you're thinking, why can't I work properly? What's going on? And it's like in the background, or the noise, or the something else that's there. So it's like it can be a visual thing. It can be like audible thing.
Auditory.
That's the word I was looking
for.
Yeah,
or even in your sort of sensory sense of yourself. So especially for neurodivergent individuals, where everybody's kind of unique and different, but in particular those who identify as sort of with neurodiversity, they quite often can feel quite overwhelmed and struggle when they're in spaces where there's too many people, where there's not enough natural light and there's a lot of artificial light. And so we'll lead into this towards the end of the podcast, how best to support individuals. We'll probably do a whole separate podcast on neurodiversity, but I just kind of wanted to weave that in there, really, because some of us are more sensory and more susceptible or sensitive to sensory overload. So wearing artificial fabrics, being around with artificial light, and looking at screens a lot of the time, for some people will overload our systems more so than another individual. Some people will find, like, you know, you said about the auditory stuff, some people could sit quite happily with a ton of noise going on around them and it won't bother them or their ability to focus and work. But other people, that becomes too much.
I guess it's the balance as well. If you're spending the majority of your day in a non-natural environment where there isn't much natural light, and it's those bright office, like I'm imagining there's very bright white kind of lights in an office, and your bright screen, and maybe looking at your phone as well, and you're not even getting outside at lunchtime to have a stroll in the fresh air.
Yeah,
that's 7 or 8 hours of your day. That is the majority of your day.
Yes,
that is in. So the natural habitat for you, Monday to Friday, is an unnatural habitat.
It's been replaced with some sort of artificial synthetic environment. And if you think about the natural habitat, there are lots more curved edges, different textures that are actually calming to us as humans. If you think about the feeling that you get in your body when you place your hand on wood, for example, or on the bark of a tree or something.
Woo.
But think about the synthetic fibers that have replaced wooden chairs, for example.
Or just clothing. Like, if you've got synthetic fiber on your body, it's not necessarily always very comfortable.
Right? Yeah. Literally, you can't breathe. And so we're going to talk about the benefits of nature in a little while. But essentially, everything's also just, it's all straight lines a lot of the time in office environments. We're in these kind of box-like buildings with box-like spaces and setups that those things aren't our natural state. They aren't appeasing to us. They don't calm our nervous systems. They do the opposite. And so that can become then mentally stressful. So those are some of the things in the workplace. The other things I'd like to talk about is toxic work culture and how that can play a part on things for us. A lack of appreciation that can sometimes be shown, or rather not shown, no appreciation being shown for the completion of projects or tasks, which if you're putting and pouring your kind of heart and soul into things at work, or spending a lot of time and effort over something, and then nobody really appreciates the efforts you're making or shows any kind of response and appreciates the value that you're bringing, that starts to become really deflating, because ultimately we all crave making some kind of positive difference, having some sort of purpose and sense of fulfillment. And when that's missing, that becomes really not great for our mental health.
Yeah, I can imagine, because if you're putting a lot of effort and care and time into something and it's not even acknowledged, let alone praised, it's like, it's defeating, isn't it, I guess? And it's then your conversation with yourself, how you deal with that. And even the most resilient person will find that quite unsavory, I guess, when you're trying to do something positive and trying to do the best at something, your best at something, you know.
Yeah.
And you're not getting any recognition for it. So I can see that. And but the toxic work culture, I mean, we've talked about culture in previous podcast episodes, but for me, that is, it's such a beast, because it could come from the top down. Say it could be just a culture of a company that you work in, and everyone, just even if they don't willingly know they're doing it, they feed into it because that's the way it is. It's almost like an institution, right, where it's just the way things work in that place. And for people, I have kind of not fully experienced it, but for people I can imagine who, they never really felt it fitted them naturally anyway. If you stay in that environment for a long period of time, it's not going to be good for your mental health, because already, if at the beginning you're not comfortable with it, if you stay in there for years upon years in that job, I mean, that's the opposite of what you want to be doing, right? Like, in your mind, you're sort of torturing yourself almost, because this culture of, like, I guess, like, profit over care for their staff and stuff, it's very harmful, I think, to especially people who they've never felt. I guess what I'm trying to explain is, if you've never felt attached to that, you've never been driven by kind of like being really successful at all costs, but you've always felt like you wanted to be kind of a part of something in a community or something, and you're in a workplace where it just doesn't fit those values, that must be really tricky.
Yeah, it definitely comes down to values and where there's a misalignment. And the sad part is that quite often companies will have done exercises to create some sort of mission system and mission statement. And we've touched on this in previous episodes before, but where there's a mismatch between the culture that's being portrayed and then the one that you actually experience when you come to join the organisation. Because there's some very good marketing that gets done often, but behind the scenes, it's a very different setting. And I think it's so important for what's said and proposed on the outside to really match what's actually going on the inside, and vice versa. Saying what we mean and meaning what we say, and then doing what we say we're going to do. All of those things. So that can really, really be very damaging. And the discrimination piece as well, it's such a broad topic, but when we feel as though we aren't being seen and appreciated as equal to our peers for whatever reason, and we're maybe being passed over opportunities, or we're being given second rate kind of we're having stuff just piled on us because of something that we're being seen as being different or not as good as, that can really start to eat away and erode people's confidence. So then the outside, if you see that as being sort of all the things that contribute to the inside environment, whether that's work or learning environment, then the outside environment would be things like whatever's going on at home. If there's something that is unsettling for us, some kind of conflict or struggles, if we've got things going on with our health, with our finances, relationships that we're in that we feel are toxic in our personal lives. We've touched on loneliness before. We did an episode about loneliness, and obviously that can lead to ill mental health. Carrying family shame. This is one we haven't talked about, and I think it would be a good one to do another podcast on, is the topic of shame, how we carry that with us, and how that can inhibit us and how it can tip us into ill mental health when it starts to kind of almost eat away at us if we don't explore it and resolve it. Feeling unsafe, that could be feeling unsafe in a relationship or feeling unsafe in our home environment. Anxiety about world issues. This is a really big one at the moment for, you know, people all around the world for lots of different reasons. There's been so much going on that's been causing unrest in our bodies. And the fact that we are bombarded all of the time with the news of what's going on around the whole world, that is too much for our systems. We're not designed as humans to handle the feeling of having to save the whole world, you know.
And I guess we haven't evolved at the rate that technology has just taken off in the last 10 to 20 years, where now our brains just aren't ready for all of this information, all this responsibility. You know, I say responsibility, but, you know, the feeling that we might want to digest it or act on some of the things that we're being exposed to. And it's like, we're just physically maybe not capable of holding that much. I mean, it doesn't seem natural, does it, to have, like, you know, 1,000 different things bombarding
you
every day.
Well, it isn't. If you think, you know, 200 years ago even, like, we would have known maybe what was going on in our own immediate life, the life of our family, of the village, of the, you know, at the largest of our town, perhaps, you know. But it wouldn't have gone beyond that. We would have not really known much about what was going on in the whole, you know, the city or the city, the next city along or something. Or, you know, it's extended now to knowing what's going on such a large scale in the lives of others, and feeling helpless in being able to make a difference where there are those others who are in struggle. And of course, the media focus in on the stories that are bad news stories of what's going wrong in the world. They very rarely speak to what's going well and what successes there are in balance, you know. So we get over bombarded with that, and every time somebody turns on the news or listens to the radio and something comes in, and our bodies then respond to receiving that information, and we trigger the stress response in our bodies. And as you say, our minds are pretty overwhelmed with it all. How do you hold all of that mentally? So that's a big sort of one that's a sign of the times, really. And it's important, and we'll come on to sort of coping strategies specifically in relation to the workplace, but this kind of overlaps. You noticing you have a choice as to how much you do tune in or out of some of that stuff. You can't prevent all of it. You know, some of it's going to seep in somehow or another through overhearing a conversation or, you know, seeing something on the side of a bus or whatever. But most of the time, we do have the control still to switch off those the televisions, the devices, the live news streams or whatever that we need to have an awareness of what's going on, but we don't need to listen and feed it and be constantly in touch with it all of the time. So there's that side. Then there's also things that could be going on in terms of bereavements, childcare stresses, or other traumas really that could increase the risk of mental ill health.
And those kind of traumas could be from years ago, right? That you could still be holding in, not necessarily unresolved, but just still working through. And you can't underestimate how something quite traumatic in your life, whatever it has been, can still play a part in your mental health years later, right? It's hugely impactful.
Yes, that's true. So there's sort of the small traumas, the things that happen in the day-to-day that are still significant, but then not on the large scale of a large trauma of something that, like you say, can be there from our past, but is still in the background contributing to what we're holding alongside everything else. So yes, you're right, and absolutely, when we're not able to process fully and resolve those things, we're carrying more than with that in the picture. So
we've talked about the sort of the factors that can increase the risk of mental health illness in individuals, but what about the link between physical health and mental health, and how physical health can affect mental health?
Yeah, so they're intrinsically linked, really. And when we make a positive change to one area, we, by the process of doing that, automatically help the other. So when we start being more physically active, for example, after a period of not being physically active, we start to promote positive mental health as well. So you can probably speak more to that, because you, from the
Is it because I've told you I run and cycle, Jane?
I was going to say, from the world of running and cycling, you'll know, not only activities that take place outdoors, because you naturally lean towards those, but just getting the heart rate pumping and oxygen intake increasing in our body and the endorphins that get released into our bloodstream, all of those things help us to feel better mentally.
Definitely. And I think, you know, exercise, how, let's call it physical activity, because it doesn't have to be like going for a run or going for a bike ride or going for a gym session. It can be a walk in nature, a very gentle walk, you know, outside with friends or by yourself.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, to start with taking the stairs instead of taking the lift at work. But it's that process of physically moving your body that, like you say, is releasing those
endorphins.
Yeah, endorphins, those positive chemicals in the brain that help you to feel good. And I think it's important to say, though, that like going and exercising isn't going to fix your mental health. It's going to assist it, but you have to be kind to yourself when you're exercising as well, because the exercise in itself can become a competitive pursuit, or you can take the fun out of exercise quite quickly. And I think as long as it's serving you in the way that it's making you feel good and it's not becoming a bane where it's like, I have to do this, I have to, you know, it's fine if you're motivated by that and that's what drives you, that's great, and it's your thing. You know, maybe that's running, maybe that's swimming or whatever the thing is, and you need to have like a program and you're training for an event, or and that helps you. But sometimes it's, even in that situation, it's good to take a step back and realize, why am I doing this? I'm doing this for myself. I'm doing this so I can move my body, feel that freedom. Because what a great thing it is to be able to do, you know, to, you know, whatever your level of ability is, your physical ability, to be able to move in the way that we do is just, it is a joy really to behold. And we forget about that because we're hunched up most of the day at a screen. You know, we try to work in a more ergonomic manner these days. People are more aware of that, but still it's not a natural position. We're more sedentary than we've ever been. So using that exercise as a means to kind of correct some of the stuff that's going on in your body that you've been putting in a bad position all day, but more so to use the body in the way that it's designed to be moved. And, you know, small steps first, but I think the benefits are huge for physical activity and exercise, as long as you're not putting too much pressure on yourself about what you need to be achieving when you're giving yourself that time to exercise. Be kind to yourself even then, because it's kinder to your mind and you'll feel better about yourself. And get the most of those endorphins then. You know, you can, the runner's high is often talked about, and that comes in, you know, you could probably talk about any sport, the feeling that you get, or any activity. You get it when you walk, if you walk up a little hill and you see a nice view. But you hold on to that. Don't hold on to the, oh, I did 30 minutes today and I need to do 30 minutes tomorrow, because I don't think that's healthy for your mental health.
And it's interesting because I think that is really important. And also, quite often when people are experiencing burnout, there are lots of people I've worked with where there's a strong connection between the way they do one thing being the way they do everything. And so if they're overachieving and sort of striving towards moving the goalpost every time they just reach one goalpost, they've already almost moved it again. It's like, quite often people aren't listening to their body when they exercise. They're so focused on a kind of a goal with the exercise.
They're still in their mind. They're not in their body so much.
And then they override the fact that the body actually needs rest more than it does the exercise. And then there's too much adrenaline in that the body's trying to then, it's coming out of, say, being in an office environment all day, the fight or flight mode's been triggered, the adrenaline, the cortisol's all going round and round. And then they get on a bike, say, for example, in a spinning class, and they feel like they need to compete with the person next to them, or they need to compete with themselves, they say.
Or at the very least, they need to go hell for leather and just get everything out.
And then it doesn't actually benefit in the way that it could benefit if, say, they did something at a more relaxed pace and they allowed themselves to be more mindful of the feelings and sensations in their body, enjoying the, like you said, the movement of their body. Like, I don't know, in my mind, I get a picture of a person racing a million miles per hour on a bike in a speed gym, one of these spinning sessions, versus going in a pool and just gliding through the pool and at no competitive pace, not racing the person in the lane next to you, just enjoying.
It's hard because people I know through friends and through myself sometimes, that you want to feel like you've done something. And if you're not posting a hard session, or at least as something that you feel like you've exerted yourself, you feel like you've wasted that hour, precious hour of time. Yeah. But what I would say to that is that don't post it. Don't even take a watch with you or anything.
Yeah, just
and,
enjoy
you know,
it.
And you know, not every session if you can't do that. But I mean, I don't now, when I go cycling, I don't even plan my route a lot of the times. I just think I'm going to go for an hour and a bit. I know roughly where I'm going to go. And I'm just going to, I don't care. It's like, I just need to get out and just to enjoy it. And maybe throw a few efforts in if I feel like it. But I think it's funny you say spinning, because I've been spinning classes in the past. So that's going to say, if you're in a non-natural environment all day and then you go to a spinning class, that's like torture.
Yeah,
you're basically the lights and the noise
well,
and everything.
And I remember after I burnt out, I couldn't actually face any of those. I love the Les Mills classes and
other providers as well.
I haven't really experienced many other ones, so I'm not going to comment to that. But
they are available.
But I'm just, I can relate to those classes because of my experience of doing them. I used to love the body combat classes, but there was a period after burning out where I just couldn't cope with that overstimulating environment of a typical gym set up in a sort of dark room with the artificial lights, with the massive screen, with somebody shouting essentially at you. you have to be able to enjoy those sorts of experiences, then you need to be meeting them from a place of balance. When you're coming to them and you've already been overstimulated and you're feeling fatigued as a result and you're burnt out, you've already been too wired and you're so tired, just noticing that that's not going to be good for you, even though you're moving your body, it will be at more of a cost and a detriment than a benefit. So so exercise is great for your mental health when it's in, when you do it due to listening to what your body would most want you to do. So checking in with your body and say, how would you most like to move? What sort of activity feels expansive, feels in energizing or restorative for you? Because
And I think that's true. And I think people like who are like, say, very into one particular type of exercise. So if it is like, just for example, if running is your thing or cycling is your thing or swimming is your thing or gymming is your thing, it's sometimes nice to check in with yourself and think, well, actually, what could I do today that's slightly different, that's not going to put as much pressure on myself and my physical body if I'm doing the same activity every day? Mm. That's going to be a nice change, because sometimes those little breaks, those little bits of variety can really boost your mental health.
They mixing
can really,
it up. Yeah. I remember you doing that with yoga for a while. And I have
clients... Yeah, I sort of fell off of that now.
I had a client this morning who loved who loves going for walks, does other activities in a very kind of goal-focused way, which works really, really well for her. And she recognises that when she's in that goal-focused way exercising, it's not a mental health benefit. She's in a particular focused zone then. And so her exercise that benefits her mental health is walking in the woods. Like, how beautiful. Like, you know, it doesn't need to be one thing or another.
Exactly.
Definitely mixing up, I think, is so, it can be so helpful.
So we've talked about the physical activity and exercise with mental health, but there's probably another big piece here around nutrition.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much of what we eat plays a part in our mental health, Jane?
Yeah. Well, what we eat does directly affect our brain function. So the more nutrition, the more vitamins, really the more rich our food is in the things that are good for us, like antioxidants, for example.
So what we're talking about is, and we're not going to start going into like diets and, you know, all these things, because it's not our place to, but what we're talking about here, I guess, is non-processed foods.
It's not really rocket science, is it?
Yeah.
We know deep down what's good for us. It's anything that doesn't come out of a plastic packet.
Unfortunately, a lot of good stuff does now as well.
But if it does come out of a plastic packet, at least if
you can peel it,
it's not being processed.
Yeah, if you can peel it, it'll be fine.
Yeah, so, or if it's just a nut that's been shelled, then it's not so bad. But yeah, so essentially, the more nutrition we put in, the better our body's able to regulate and cope with stressful situations, and the better our brain chemistry is. And therefore,
I'm a big believer that that you will know what you like. You will know what's nutritious and good for you. You know, we'll know what will work for you, right? Because we all have different diets and different things we like to eat. But because if you know it's healthy and you've characterized it as being healthy, then it probably is healthy. I think follow your own intuition on that sometimes, yeah. Because we can get pulled in different directions about what is and what isn't healthy. Do the research yourself, and if it fits with your lifestyle and your kind of ethical boundaries or whatever, just eat what you think is healthy. And I think most people will have a genuinely good idea of what is healthy.
Yeah, and being gentle with yourself so it doesn't become some militant
pursuit. Oh yeah, exactly. You know, it's got to be balanced. Yeah.
But also just, I think sometimes we can end up labelling ourselves as one thing or another and then feel like we can't waver from that.
I'm just an entertainer, Jane.
But say, for example, you've cut out dairy or something for whatever reasons, but you really one day your body just feels like it needs cheese, for example, then don't beat yourself up about that and feel like and this is coming from two people who identify as being plant-based and have been for a very, very long time. I just think we can become a bit obsessed sometimes with what we follow that's dictated to us. And the more that I work with people to listen to themselves, listen to their bodies, the better they get at honing that feeling about what the body actually needs. Because children actually are remarkably good at it, aren't they? Like, I remember being a kid and this still happens now. Like, I have days where I just want to eat lots of one thing. And it's probably because if they ran some sort of scientific thing on me, they'd probably find, oh yeah, the day that you've just ate buckets of kale, you were probably iron deficient, for example. You know, I think
I'm just thinking of our kids and most of the stuff is yellow. So I'm not sure if that theory checks out. So Jane, I'm thinking we've got a lot more to get through, really, because we're going to be talking about healthy lifestyle choices, about sleep and its impact on mental health, but also long-term health conditions. And that's not even taking into account like how you can do stuff in the workplace to aid your mental health. So we're already at 32 minutes or so. So perhaps we should wrap this one up and we'll do a part two. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so thank you for listening to this part one of our mental health special. And be sure to tune in next week for part two. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Art of Balance podcast. We hope you enjoyed part one there of our mental health special. And you'll tune in again next week for the second part where we finish off the discussion and hopefully leave you walking away with some great ideas of how to not only improve and look after your own mental health, but also those of any team members or staff that you work with in your office or workplace. Also, don't forget you can leave a review or a rating on the podcast platform where you download this from. That'd be really helpful for us to grow our community and get this out to more people. In the meantime, if you have any questions, don't forget you can drop us an email, hello@balanceology.uk. If you have any queries or you have any suggestions for podcast ideas, we'd love to hear them and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. In the meantime, have a great week. Enjoy the good weather if it's with you where you are. It is here at the moment. Hopefully it stays, fingers crossed, for the bank holidays coming up. We'll catch you next time though on the Art of Balance podcast. Take care and see you soon.